It's Politics with Amy Walter from The Takeaway. Good to have you with us. And a shout out of congratulations to my hometown Nationals for their historic World Series win. Woo-woo! All right, well, we begin today with an interview I've been wanting to do for a while.
I want to be very clear.
Yes.
Not picking signs.
You mean you never, but I never get your name on a sign.
Thank you.
In big letters.
In big letters. That says Amy 2020, okay, Amy for America.
Yeah,
there are no Amys.
That's Amy Klobuchar, United States Senator from Minnesota.
And I'm a candidate for President of the United States.
Klobuchar announced her run back in February, but she's only recently begun to get more attention after a strong performance in the October debate.
The difference between a plan and a pipe dream is something that you can actually get done.
I sat down with Senator Klobuchar earlier this week to talk about her candidacy, but she actually asked me the first question, and it was a softball, literally.
So are you ready for the softball game?
Yeah, we're definitely working hard.
Senator Klobuchar is the color commentator every year for the Congressional Women's Softball Game.
Welcome to the 10th annual Congressional Women's Softball Game between women members of Congress and women of the D.C. press corps.
But I was always curious why she wasn't out on the field.
You're a good color commentator. I don't mean to
dismiss
your skill there.
Mm-hmm.
But why are you not on the field?
Oh, because I have never been that great of a softball player. In fourth grade, I had the second to the worst softball throw in the president's physical fitness class in my fourth grade class, and the worst one was Gretchen Johnson, but who's counting?
All right, then we got down to business, and Klobuchar started with a different kind of pitch.
I have won every single red and purple congressional district three times. And I have won the rural districts that border Iowa and South and North Dakota that Donald Trump won. And I also won Michelle Bachmann's district. I won in the northern district that is like where all the steelworkers are, where Donald Trump won by significant numbers. And so that's because I bring people with me. And so I think I have that track record, plus now and the momentum that we're seeing. We just had a new poll out of New Hampshire where I'm up to number five there. And without coming in with a lot of name ID, especially in New Hampshire. And I think this is my moment. People have to get to know me, and then they can decide.
Given all of that you just went through about all the success that you've had and how much Democratic voters want to see somebody who can win in those kind of places, why hasn't that automatically propelled you up?
Because
higher.
People don't really know me, not all of them, maybe half of them now. And this is the same thing was with Jimmy Carter. The same thing happened to Bill Clinton. People start sometimes at the behind in the pack. I wasn't behind. I was always like to joke that I was beat out 18 people right away. But they need to get to know you. So that's what this process is for me. And that's why all of these going on the bus tour and visiting all these Trump counties that we had won with Obama was so key to what I'm saying. And then in New Hampshire, doing 10 counties in 30 hours with 3 hours in sleep the day after the debate.
Was that a good idea?
Keep pushing. Yes, it was.
30 hours straight. Did you need to do 30
hours
straight?
There was a nor'easter. That was the problem.
Got it.
And it was a big rainstorm, but people still came. It was a huge crowd. So that's what I'm doing. I'm getting out there in this old-fashioned way, and I think we need to do more of that, as well as get my name out there on the internet. We've run some really good ads lately in those states that I think have been helpful, and we raised over $2 million in just 6 days after the debate. And so that allows us to get me out there. And I mean, I wasn't running for president my whole life. I wasn't running for president even the last 5 years. I had a win in a purple state. And I think that should be a value that you can win in those states. Some of my colleagues ran before. They have huge name ID. One's a former vice president. Bernie ran before. Elizabeth has been clearly out there for a number of years now, showing some intention she's going to run. And so it's just a very different situation. But that doesn't mean that you don't win the way I'm winning.
Do you need then for Joe Biden to fail in order for you to succeed?
Oh, I don't know about that. All I know is I want to be the only one left standing. So I guess everyone would have
everybody
to leave to make that happen. So I wouldn't pick out one person.
Do you buy that there is this sort of more progressive, liberal, what I would say the structural change lane, people who are saying we need to make big, bold, structural moves, Sanders, Warren, and then they're the folks you would be in this category talking about change, but in a less dramatic way.
I don't view it that way because I view my ideas as bold. And so I wouldn't use that character. Do we have differences?
Yeah.
Yes. I view them as bold, taking on climate change in a big way and going to carbon neutral by 2050 and doing all these things we're going to be able to do even in the first week, climate change agreement, the gas mileage standards, which is a huge problem with Trump, the clean power rules, the sweeping legislation with some kind of carbon pricing. That's bold. We haven't done anything except energy efficiency. And then, of course, states have done some work and universities and businesses, but not the federal government. So that's the first thing. I think it's bold to say you're going to get immigration reform done in a year when no one has succeeded. I am sure I can do it because I know where those Republican votes are. I think it's bold to be the first president taking on addiction and mental health in a big way. There have been presidents that have done things about it, that have talked about it, even some personal experiences and stories. But I've pledged to really take this on in a big way. And I think it's bold to take on the pharma companies like I've been doing from the beginning. So I just don't buy that narrative. I don't think anyone has a monopoly on good ideas. There are clearly differences in the kind of bills we support, and I don't think we should shy away from them.
Well, speaking about climate and carbon neutral, can you do that without having a ban on fracking?
Yeah, that is because I view natural gas as the transition fuel. I don't know where we will end up in the end. I just don't think we should put an immediate ban on fracking. No, because it's better than having oil right now. Natural gas is. And it is a transitional fuel. It was only a few years ago we were celebrating, you know, that we had natural gas buses that the Obama administration touted with their transportation secretary. So I think we have to remember that it's a transitional fuel and then move very quickly to the grid and to more electric cars and to being smart about having a renewable electricity standard. So what the goal is the numbers, and then there's many ways to get there. But we're not going to get there all the way unless we don't put a lot in research and technology and have some kind of a carbon tax. And it could be a carbon tax. You can do it with cap and trade, or you can do it with a renewable fuel standard. But across the country, renewable electricity standard. But whatever you do, you've got to make sure that the people that are hurt by it, if their heating bills go up, gas bills go up, that they get that money from that pricing.
What is the biggest disconnect, you think, between what you're hearing from voters, you're out there on your bus and your 30-hour straight swing tour, and the kinds of questions that people like me are asking you or that you get asked on the debate stage?
Well, I think that they are asking much more about some of these bread and butter issues like long-term care. We are having an aging of our senior population. I called it the silver tsunami, and then AARP told me that was too mean. So
it
I call
too
it
mean?
Yeah. So I call it the senior surge.
Okay.
Because, you know, you don't want to have it be
the silver.
I'm sorry, the silver surge.
Yeah, I got it.
Okay. I mentioned mental health. 1 in 5 Americans have mental health problems sometime in their life. Addiction. 1 in 2 Americans are touched by it in some way. So those are things they bring up. Interestingly enough, I've had this happen once, so it's not really fair, but I was in Berlin, New Hampshire, which has had a town with a lot of closed down mills. And so we talked about all that. And then it went kind of off the rails in a good way. Everyone was talking about how the impeachment proceeding worked. And it was just two weeks ago.
How it actually technically worked.
Like real questions. They were trying to figure it out. They were talking to each other. And then I go, well, you know, it's like that Law and Order show, but it's not criminal. Mm-hmm. The first half, they get the evidence, and the second half. And it was a really good discussion, and it weirdly just renewed my faith in, because they're just as citizens, I promise. We're grappling with how it worked. Some were Republicans, some were independents, some were Democrats. It was a mixed group. But it wasn't like a gotcha question. They were trying to figure it out with each other.
Do you worry that, though, that the focus on impeachment and what is potentially a long process of impeachment takes away an ability for you to make a broader bread and butter message?
No, because I think that it's part of the same. I mean, my message is a little different than some of my colleagues. I've been constructively showing how we could make things better economically. But I've also, from the moment I announced in the middle of that blizzard with 4 inches of snow on my head that wasn't supposed to happen, in the middle of the Mississippi River, my point for picking that place was that we need to bridge the river of our divides to get to a higher plane. I actually said in the announcement that we need to look up and look at each other. And this is, of course, Donald Trump was bad at that point, but he's escalated even more. I also conjured up the image of our community when that bridge had collapsed just a year, just a mile from where I was, about how my lasting memories of that were the off-duty firefighter tethering herself to the side of the river, diving in and out looking for survivors. She just happened to be there. The tasty truck driver who could have saved his life by ramming in the back of a school bus of kids, but veered off and burned to death in his cab and saved the bus. The bus that plummeted down 30 feet and was hanging on a guardrail. School camp counselor Hernandez, young guy, has this moment when the doors open. Is he going to run off himself? Because it looks like it's going over. He gets every kid off for safety. That's our country. And I just believe in my heart, as we learned Elijah Cummings always loved to say, we're better than this. At his funeral, people kept noting that he would say, we're so much better than this. And so that's my message. And I think that the impeachment piece of it, yes, it dominates TV with all the legalities, you know, as it should. It's a big deal. But fundamentally, I think Americans can step back. Most of them have read parts or heard about parts of that transcript or the partial transcript where they see a president, you know, going to a foreign leader. And instead of talking about things you should talk about with foreign leaders about another country invading our elections or something, he chooses to talk about getting dirt on a political opponent. They know what that is. So that's why I see it as fitting in with the pattern of his behavior, always putting something else in front of the country.
Can I go back to something you said about we're better than this? It seems to me that was the message that Hillary Clinton was also putting forward, and that theme of love Trump's hate and all of that. Mm-hmm. And there were a lot of Democrats after that election who said, you know what, that's nice and everything, but obviously that's not enough. So is it enough to just have a message that says we're better than this?
No. Okay. I'm just saying. It was on my mind because of Elijah. But I think that means more than just about Trump going after people of color and immigrants, which is horrific. I think it's also about economics. I think it's also about how we're dealing with the rest of the world. And when you look at you know, what he did with that tax bill, and then he goes down to Mar-a-Lago and says, hey, I just made you a lot richer. You could say we're better than this about that, too. So I'm not just talking about his meanness and his mean tweets and everything he does. I'm actually talking about patriotism and what it means, which includes economic patriotism, making sure that, in Paul Wellstone's words, we all do better when we all do better. So I think there is something more there. And then you also have just people's own self-interest. It's not in the best interest of the farmers to have a guy that's in this trade war and isn't really resolving it in a big way and has basically sold out to the oil companies over biofuels. That's not in their best interest in the middle of Iowa or Minnesota or Missouri. And it's not in the best interest of the citizens of this country when you got a guy that's not really working on bringing their drug prices down. You can go through the economic issues pretty clearly. And I do think we lost that in the last election. I've been the first to say it all the time. I think we lost that. And we shouldn't have, because he is someone that is pure Donald Trump selfish. He puts himself first.
Senator Amy Klobuchar and I talked a lot about her presidential candidacy. But I also wanted to ask her about something she's been focused on in the Senate, lowering the cost of prescription drugs.
Pharma. There are two lobbyists for every member of Congress. Two lobbyists for every member of Congress. And they think they own Washington. They probably do. And as I've said for many years, they don't own me. And that is as evident by the fact that I've been leading these bills since I got to Washington. I've been very disappointed. I was disappointed that it didn't get in the Affordable Care Act. And then, of course, now when President Trump ran, he claimed that he was going to bring drug prices down so far that your head would spin. He said that on Fox. Well, it's been the opposite. They keep going up. Insulin over the last 10 years or so, three times of what it was. And you've just seen this throughout time. I think the answer is really obvious, and that is that we need to bring the cost down. And one way we do it, one big, big way, is with negotiations under Medicare. 43 million seniors, that's a big bargaining power, and yet they're locked in. There's a law on the books that says they can't negotiate, that Medicare can't negotiate, whereas Medicaid and the VA can.
Right.
So I have the bill, lead the bill with 34 senators to lift that ban. Bringing in less expensive drugs from other countries. That's something that I've led with Senator first McCain and now Senator Grassley. And so we got 14 Republican votes for an amendment on that a few years ago. So I just think that is actually something that can get done. Here's the great news. A president can do it herself. You can get a waiver to bring in less expensive drugs without even passing a bill. Stopping pay for delay, where the big pharma companies pay off the generics to keep their products off the market. And then the bill that's coming through the House, which is to put some caps on prices based on the international prices. There are so many things we can do, but people have to have the will to take on pharma. I do. And as president, I can get it done. And the public is with me. This is one of those, as you know, great examples where we can bring people with us, not just a fired up Democratic base, but Republicans and independents.
But you do, as to your point, there is bipartisan support. The House bill, not as much, but in the Senate,
there was bringing less expensive drugs. Yeah. There was 14 votes, but it wasn't enough to put it over. There were more Democrats voting for it.
So in that sense, it seems unlikely that much can get done through a traditional legislative path.
I think on some of these big ticket items, so let's say we win, and which we will, the presidency, and if we win big, if I'm in heading up the ticket, then we will win the U.S. Senate. So then we can get a lot done legislatively. If we don't win the U.S. Senate, which I'm not going to even consider will happen, you know, then it's harder, but there are still issues that we can get done with the new president.
And do you think, though, that part of the frustration for voters about the fact that politicians keep talking about lowering the cost of prescription drugs. I think every candidate, Democrat or Republican, has said they're going to do this, and that it hasn't resulted in anything, does lead them to support something like a Medicare for all. Why not get rid of the entire system? If the system is this broken and pharma is so powerful, well, let's just blow it all up and then then we won't have these problems.
So I understand that sentiment, but I want to actually get things done that'll make a difference. And actually, when you look at some of the pharmaceutical prices in other countries, they have all kinds of healthcare system. It is not related to single payer that all the other countries have lower prices. Some have that, some don't. Some have private, some have a mixture. But what is remarkable about the U.S. is that we're producing all these drugs, and yet we have some of the highest prices in the world. It makes no sense at all. It's American money, taxpayer money even, that went into a lot of the research for them. So that's how I explain it. And not everyone's on Medicare for All anyway, of the public. Like, they get that this could be a problem. 149 million Americans would lose their current insurance in 4 years. That's what the bill says on page 8. So I think that this is an independent issue. And this is where I joined forces with Bernie. Bernie and I actually led the amendment. It was Klobuchar Sanders for bringing in less expensive drugs from other countries. We've worked together on other issues related to this. He asked me to do a CNN debate to pair up with him against two Republicans. And this was one of the issues that we raised. So, you know, I think that there's a lot that unites us and our party on this. And there are a number of Republicans that want to come with us. We just need a president that actually doesn't just talk the talk, but makes it the issue.
So in 2018, Democrats ran almost consistently on the healthcare issue on
pre-existing
conditions, right? It was protect Obamacare, protect the pre-existing conditions.
Which really bore out to be true based on the fact that Trump then filed a lawsuit, which is pending, to basically get rid of the protection of pre-existing conditions. We weren't making it up.
How did Democrats go from making the focus on pre-existing conditions, protecting Obamacare, to Medicare for All now being a litmus test?
Yeah, you know what? You should ask some of my colleagues, because I actually think we should build on the Affordable Care Act. And you saw just recently, despite the Trump administration sabotage, which has been extensive, and despite some of the Republican governors not even accepting the Medicaid money, which could help their states, you still have some decreased rates going on with Affordable Care Act. But I think we could do better. We do better by bringing down the cost of pharmaceuticals, not just for the individual consumer, but for the government, by having this more competition. And then you also do better with a public option, something President Obama wanted to do from the beginning. And you could do it with Medicaid or Medicare, but it's basically think about it as a nonprofit option to compete with these insurance companies. And then people can buy into it. And not only do they get a better deal, I think it will bring down, and there's some study showing this, bring down costs overall. And it'll cover a lot more people, I think 12 million more people, and bring down the cost for 13 million people. So that's where I am.
Senator Klobuchar, thank you so
much.
Okay. Oh, wait. Is it?
Yeah.
I hear people introducing you a million different ways.
No, that's
okay. Is it
okay.
Char?
It's both.
Char.
My mom
what
said
do you
Klobuchar,
like to say?
And my dad said Klobuchar.
What do you
and
say?
And so I say Klobuchar because mm-hmm. it's easier to say, honestly. So I've always said that. There is a strain of Klobuchars up in Ely, where my dad was born, who say Klobuchar. And every time I am in a parade up there, there's about 10 of them. And they yell, say your name right, it's Klobuchar. And then I yell, just be happy I'm there. How many other Slovenian senators are there?
Amy Klobuchar is United States Senator from Minnesota and a presidential candidate.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.